Is it possible that there's a foreign government that declared war on the United States and we didn't get the memo and we don't know there's a war? That we don't know that another government is actually actively trying to cause the downfall of our country? It was a desperate attempt by China to boost exports and support a slowing economy. The move had worldwide repercussions impacting other countries, including the United States.
I believe wholeheartedly that we are as much in a Cold War with China today as we were with the Soviets in 1965 or 1975 or 1985. The difference is now China is trying new tactics. I think, as far-fetched as it might sound to some people, I think one of the reasons that fentanyl has flooded this country at the hands of China, it's because ultimately they want to see as many young men dead as possible.
The number one cause of death in the United States right now between the ages of, for men between 18 and 45, death by fentanyl. What do men between the ages of 18 and 45 do in wartime?
They fight.
Fentanyl now, Mark, in the U.S. killing 200 people a day. We recently, I think, saw a huge funding bill for Ukraine go through. How many Ukrainians have died a day since that conflict started, or that war with Russia started? 40. So you're talking five times as many people in our country dying every single day. Number one cause of death, like we just spoke about, between the age of 18 and 45. It's still not a priority for our government. 97% of the fentanyl and fentanyl precursors now come from China. So the Mexican cartel orders $1 million of chemicals from China. Someone in China, the Communist Party, pays the bill for that $1 million of chemicals. The chemicals go to Mexico, the drugs are made, the drugs are shipped to the United States. The Chinese government says, hey, we paid this invoice for you. You owe us $1 million. Pay us $1 million cash in US dollars in Los Angeles, California. Give it to us in a suitcase that can't be traced on a street corner somewhere. And where does that money go, Mark? Mark, is it possible, Chief Mark Garrett, is it possible that there's a foreign government that declared war on the United States and we didn't get the memo? And we don't know there's a war, that we don't know that another government is actually actively trying to cause the downfall of our country? Is that possible?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Yeah, it's possible that another country has declared war on us, and it's not possible that we as a nation don't know about it. Maybe right. Bury our heads in the sand, but yeah, we know about it, Bill.
That's what we're going to talk about today. There's a report that came out recently. And just to be clear, this is not really your opinion, my opinion. We will give our opinions on the report, but the document we're discussing was produced by the Select Committee on the Strategic Competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. It's the CCP's role, the Chinese Communist Party's role in the fentanyl crisis. That's a bipartisan group in Congress that did this investigation. And hey, it's something, Mark, that I lived with in my career at DEA, especially my last 8 years on the job, where I saw this growing influence that China was having on the synthetic drug trade. And I was speaking out about it, not really seeing a lot of action to address it. And what I'd like to do is just kind of set the tone first and explain to people why this happened 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And then immediately after that, before we start breaking down this report, I would like to just get your initial thoughts on someone obviously very involved in law enforcement, Chief California Highway Patrol in the LA area, but maybe not necessarily so involved in the international drug trade. And when you read this report, what were your initial thoughts on it, that this is the foundation or the underlying cause of what we're seeing now in our country? So first, when did this influence of China start? We got to turn back the clock to 2015, 2016. And maybe what we'll do is, Anthony Vince, you can put up a chart right now that shows fentanyl deaths in the United States. And if everybody's looking at that, you will see a pretty sharp rise in the graph. The trajectory of that graph will change around 2015 and 2016. Why did that happen? We know we're going to talk about what this report says. The question I want to answer right now is, why did the Chinese government make this decision? Turn back the clock, Mark. What was going on in 2015, 2016? There was a presidential election.
A little one.
There was, let's call it the rhetoric at that time, trade tariffs, trade war were some of the terms we heard, you know, holding China accountable. I think that's fair to say that that was another part of the rhetoric. And also to remind people why the Chinese government made this decision and acted with a sense of urgency at that time. Let's talk about the economy of China around 2015, 2016. They did something called currency devaluation. Now, that's when a government just basically devalues its own currency. And it's, with my education level, Mark, it's not the easiest thing for me to explain, but I'll give it a crack. And this is from a financial newsletter. It was a desperate attempt by China to boost exports and support a slowing economy. The move had worldwide repercussions impacting other countries, including the United States. So what happened was on August 11th, 2015, the People's Bank of China devalued their currency by between 3 and 4%. They just said, all the money you people have now is worth 3.5% less. And here's an example. Hopefully this will explain why this is significant to people. Devaluation is achieved by selling domestic currency in the foreign exchange market. So you just dump your currency on the market, you flood the currency market with your currency, making it worth less because now there's so much more of it. Suppose China sells 1 million yuan and buys 57 billion US dollars. From the point of view of the market, it's as if the supply of yuan just increased. And as in any competitive market, an increase in supply causes the price to fail. 1 yuan is now worth less than it was before. So here's the example. Suppose that the value of the yuan is 10 yuan to 1 US dollar, Mark. That means that a Chinese priced product at 10 yuan would cost an American a dollar to buy. Suppose they devalue the currency by half. So now 10 yuan is 50 cents. That same product is still priced at 10 yuan in China, but it only cost an American 50 cents. So they do this to kind of boost the world's desire for their exported goods. When their economy slows, they devalue their currency to make their goods more desirable on the foreign markets. People want to buy more Chinese goods because they're cheaper. So look at it, just an example today. You know, we have, 3%, 4% inflation in this country. If China is lowering prices, so to speak, by 3 or 4%, while prices here are going up 3 or 4%, you can see where that gives them a competitive advantage in selling their products. So anyhow, there was fear in China. The people that have money in China are Communist Party officials. They're the ones that have wealth in China. When the central bank devalues the currency in the country, they want to get their money out of the country and invest it elsewhere where they can actually get a return and protect their money. And they also have to further the goals, let's call them, of the Chinese Communist Party. And in 2015, 2016, all these things fit together to create the perfect storm. People in China wanted to get their money out of the country. The economy was slowing. They realized that the United States was really, for the first time, I think, going to hold them economically accountable for what was going on, start charging them tariffs, start kind of evening the trade balance. And they said, hey, our previous plan of just dominating the world economy by doing what we do is no longer going to work. And that's when we saw them get involved in fentanyl trafficking, the production of fentanyl precursors. They were always involved in it, but that's when we saw them start to really push it. And to be clear, the reasons for that were because their economy was slowing. They were scared that they were not going to be able to compete with the U.S. the way they had been because of all the rhetoric going on. And they kind of went in this new direction and said, I think in a part of the report that we'll get to later, it was called asymmetrical warfare. Doing something that's financially beneficial to your country while it's concurrently causing a scourge in another country that you're competing with. So that kind of to set the background, Mark. Now, when you read this report and you saw what the findings of this report are, what the Chinese Communist Party is involved in with respect to fentanyl trafficking, what were your initial thoughts about that?
Well, Bill, first of all, thank you for laying out that economic foundation, that background here, because it's so important. And it's one that, for purposes of this show, I had considered. So it's a good education for me. Kind of relating to that, some things I've read previously that's darn near forgotten about, kind of indicates that China's economy is close to being in a shambles, contrary to what a lot of people may think, because they are it's a large economy, but it doesn't mean that it's a healthy economy. And so it's a very interesting point you raise. As far as the report that I read that you alluded to at the beginning of the show, my first takeaway on this, and I can't wait to get into it with detail because there's some extraordinary findings here, I think. But when I read this, there's the economic side you're talking about that certainly is real, about how this is not just focused at the United States. It's a worldwide effort by the Chinese. But when I was reading this, I was wondering, how much money can the Chinese government make with drug trafficking? Because it's exactly what they're doing. And a significant amount of money, but is it really relevant compared to the overall economy of China? And I have my doubts about that, about how much of an impact it really has compared to their overall, you know, gross national product. I have probably a more nefarious take on this, suspicious take, and that is that the Chinese are, like you said, they're asymmetric in their warfare mindset. I believe wholeheartedly that we are as much in a Cold War with China today as we were with the Soviets in 1965 or 1975 or 1985. 100% as much of a Cold War. The difference is now that China is trying new tactics. Mm-hmm. And I think, as far-fetched as it might sound to some people, I think one of the reasons that fentanyl has flooded this country at the hands of China is because ultimately they want to see as many young men dead as possible. I really believe this.
Yep. Let me just throw this in. I'll kick it back to you. The number one cause of death in the United States right now between the ages of, for men, between 18 and 45, death by fentanyl. What do men between the ages of 18 and 45 do in wartime?
They fight. And I know this is not new to our listeners, but China has always played the long game. At best, we're working from election to election cycle here in the United States. We're very short term in our thinking. China is playing over decades and hundreds of years. And so this is my take on it, and we can get into the nuts and bolts, but that's my summary about this. This is why they're doing it, because they're looking at generational diminishment of our ability to fight wars. Now, China in no way wants to go to war with America, certainly today, because I will still say this, as degraded as our military is in the last handful of years, it's still superior to any fighting force in the world. Man for man, I think certainly at a strategic level with our nuclear weapons and other resources. But China wants to win at all costs. And if China can win just by the threat of overpowering us, just by the threat saying you don't have enough people to fight, they'll win that way if they can. So that's my take on this.
Mark, that's so insightful. And when you talked about the long game, I couldn't agree with you more. What's the saying? Death by a thousand sticks. That's really, they're so patient. And, you know, they set a plan into effect that the shortest term plan they have is 10 years, the shortest term plan. And we're doing, you know, in this country, we seem to be day to day, week to week, based on what's in the news, et cetera. Fentanyl now, Mark, in the U.S., killing 200 people a day. We recently, I think, saw a huge funding bill for Ukraine go through. I don't know. Did that go through, Mark?
It did.
You know how many Ukrainians have died a day since that conflict started, or that war with Russia started? 40. So you're talking five times as many people in our country dying every single day. Number one cause of death, like we just spoke about, between the age of 18 and 45. And it's still not a priority for this, for our government. 97% of the fentanyl and fentanyl precursors now come from China. And just so people are clear, most of the fentanyl that comes into the U.S. now, it's actually synthesized or manufactured in Mexico. But make no mistake about it, as I said, 97% of the chemicals to make that drug come from China and are shipped to Mexico, sometimes even transiting the United States because of some of the laws that we have that are ripe for exploitation. So, Mark, getting into the report, the first thing to talk about, I think, is the subsidies, incentives, and grants that the Mexican government offers companies in China that produce these drugs. And some of these facts will shock people. And again, this isn't my opinion, your opinion. This is, you know, we're reading it from this report as if it's fact. Now, the report says this started in 2018. As I told you, I think it really, that may be when, I mean, the plan was developed in 2016. I saw evidence of this starting to happen in 2016. Maybe it was all put together by 2018, and that's when it was running 100%. But really, it, in my opinion, it predates what the report says. So some of the chemicals in China. So first off, the government offers incentives to companies, tax breaks to companies that produce these precursor chemicals. Even if the chemicals are illegal in China. So there can be a chemical that's illegal to produce in China, but somehow the Chinese government offers a tax break. The communist Chinese government offers a tax break to companies that produce that chemical. Now, I'm not sure how can there be such a conflict there where, you know, you have a law prohibiting something, but on the other hand, you're saying, but if you produce this thing that's illegal, we're going to give you a tax break and favorable tax treatment as long as what, Mark? It's exported.
Yeah.
As long as you're exporting it out of the country. When you see that kind of state-sponsored stuff, I mean, is there a parallel to that with anything else that, you know, you're more of a historian than me. Is there a parallel to anything else in history that you see where the government is actually offering, almost, you could say, offering tax breaks to produce an illicit drug as long as it's going outside the country and affecting people from another country?
Well, it's a great question as far as specific parallels when you're talking about economic breaks, subsidies, things like this, to engage in behavior that's otherwise illegal. I think we can find endless numbers of, you know, philosophical parallels, operational parallels throughout history. But this is what happens, Bill, when we're talking about a totalitarian government. In other words, the rules only apply to the extent they serve the ruling class. That's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, without having to go out and identify their parallels, this has happened throughout history. The rules apply to everybody else except for the ruling class, the dictator, the, you know, that elite class. Now, we see things like this that are nowhere near as nefarious happening in this country right now, but they still are similar. And I wouldn't even go there right now, but we see a lot of that. And so, you know, this is an example of how insidious totalitarianism is, Bill. This is exactly what's happening. So they don't want to harm their own people. They want to harm as many people in opposing countries, people, adversaries, as possible. One thing I want to say about this is that I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that the COVID crisis was a coincidence, and it certainly was a conjunction with this. I want to go back a little bit. I have these notes here I want to talk about as well. Mm-hmm. But for the longest time, we were told by China, we were told by the media here in this country, for whatever reason, that, oh, the COVID virus, it came from a wet market, a wet lab, I'm sorry, whatever it was, and bats and all this crap. And any of us who had, you know, a couple of brain cells to slap together, who weren't born yesterday, say, wait a minute. Do you really think that China itself is that lax, or, you know, they have these few controls and things like this? they're going to allow this to happen. We all knew that it came from the Wuhan lab. We all knew it. And now we know for a fact that it did come from Wuhan lab. I don't think maybe they anticipated the outbreak to be as crazy as it was in China, but they certainly wanted to experiment on other people. This is my assessment. This is my belief. And this is not totally separate from the fentanyl crisis. They are one and the same to me. They are looking, they are probing. They're trying to find a weak spot. They're trying to find the most efficient, the most effective way to deal with their adversaries. And you said earlier, Bill, in an asymmetrical way. This is exactly what they're up to. So now they did this poke with COVID. They saw what the actual biological effect was. But I think more importantly with that, they saw what the cultural, political, and social impact it was had specifically here in North America, more specifically with the United States. So go back to your original question. Communist countries, dictatorships, totalitarian regimes will do anything, and including gladly breaking their own rules to achieve their own ends.
You know, and one thing, Mark, I'll add to that talk about, let's call it germ warfare. When this first happened, the pandemic started, I looked at it and said, what is the number one threat to communism? And within a communist country, what's the number one threat to communism within a communist country? You know what the reality is, what it is? It's old age. It's old age because in a communist society, those people are not producing. They're costing, right? You know, they're not, the government has to take care of all those old people who are not productive members, not adding to society. They're a cost to society. So when, you know, when a sickness or illness affects old people exponentially more than young people, I have to look at it and say, is there something to that? Is there a reason why they're okay with having that disproportionate impact on old people in their country? And the reality is, in a communist society, it makes you economically stronger when that happens.
It does.
In a capitalist society, I would argue the opposite happens, where in a capitalist society, generally as people age, they are accumulating more wealth. They're wealthier people, et cetera. And I think that, you know, like I said, when I saw that, I just thought that's interesting. It, you know, when a country is economically struggling, a communist country, a socialist country, and all of a sudden there's something that disproportionately affects the elders in that country, that's something to look at. Mm-hmm. Another thing, you know, so you talked about, you said you were a little bit skeptical of maybe how much money that could be generated from this, right? But let me say this to that, Mark. We've seen at our, and we're getting into a lot of different connected issues here, Mark. We've seen at our southern border, military-aged men, Chinese nationals, coming across the border like never before. What, 400 times the number, 600 times the number that's been in past years? I don't know. I'm throwing that number out. Fact check me on that.
Well,
I don't know what it is, but exponentially more, right? Mm-hmm. Using the drug trade, using the fentanyl trade, here's what the Chinese Communist Party can do. The drug cartel in Mexico, they order $1 million of precursor chemicals from a company in China, right? Those chemicals are shipped to Mexico. Now, there's an invoice. There's an invoice in China. The drug cartel owes the Chinese $1 million for those chemicals, right? The Chinese say, hey, hold on a minute. We have someone here in this country who will pay that bill for you. Don't worry about it. We'll pay that bill for you here in China, and you can pay us back in the United States. Does that make sense? So the Mexican cartel orders $1 million of chemicals from China. Someone in China, the Communist Party, pays the bill for that $1 million of chemicals. The chemicals go to Mexico. The drugs are made. The drugs are shipped to the United States. And now the Chinese government says, hey, we paid this invoice for you. You owe us $1 million. Pay us $1 million cash in U.S. dollars in Los Angeles, California. Give it to us in a suitcase that can't be traced on a street corner somewhere. And where does that money go, Mark? Maybe it goes to these foreign nationals that are crossing the border that are going to set themselves up here as operatives and do who knows what for the next 10, 15, 20 years waiting for a mission, you know, Like, you remember, what was that movie? Sleeper Cell or?
Yeah.
Sleepers or something like that?
Yes.
I mean, that's a real threat.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's a real threat. That there's right now in this country, there's been criminal cases filed against, like, basically secret police, Chinese nationals in our communities, intimidating people, intimidating Chinese Americans or Chinese nationals living here. If their views on Taiwan don't agree with the Communist National, Chinese Communist Party's views, all these things, they almost have like a secret police force here. Where does the money come from to fund those things? It comes from the drug trade, and it's untraceable cash. So when you say it may not be a huge source of revenue for them, you are correct, but it's also an untraceable source of cash. It's a way for them to fund any kind of nefarious operations they need to fund in the United States and do it with drug money that really is very hard to track down.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raise, Bill, one I hadn't fully considered, but definitely, I won't even say it's likely, it's almost 100%, because we know there's this massive influx of Chinese nationals, almost all military-aged men. And now, because, you know, Texas has put up razor wire and containers on their border, now they're all flooding into California. Yep. But it makes total sense what you're saying, that this is another part of an asymmetric war that's being fought. And I'll tell you right now, if people are not, and I hate to use the word afraid, because I don't want us to be afraid. We have, you know, heavy fear, it turns into panic. People start being paralyzed to do nothing. But if people are not concerned about all of these different things happening, and like you said, Bill, the likelihood that sleeper cells are here for the long term or planning something catastrophic for this country. And again, it's another example of asymmetrical warfare. If you have some type of mass casualty event or multiple ones throughout the nation, then I think people are naive. I think they're absolutely naive. And that number that you gave earlier with 200, I mean, think about that, 200 people a day dying.
That's an airliner.
What's that?
It's an airliner, like an airline.
It's an airliner.
Yeah.
That's a great, you know, it's a horrible visual, but it's an accurate visual. 200 people a day dying. You think about that. What an effect. That's dispersed throughout the entire country. What if that happened? What about 2,000 people a day over mass casualty events, you know, whatever city it is or what rural area that is? That's what our adversaries, and specifically right now China, are looking to do. They want our nation, they want our culture, our society to become destabilized, to make us weaker. They want to bifurcate people through any means possible. And killing 200 people a day through these drugs is just one of the ways to do it.
Hey, and just to touch on one more thing with the funding, Mark, a few weeks ago, we talked about the Octopus murders.
Yes.
And you remember the, I don't want to say allegations, discussions about how it appeared that the CIA was, you know, using gambling operations and like cigarette sales and all these things to fund their covert operations, right?
Yes.
But we don't. So there's kind of, I don't want to say proof, but it seems very likely, in my opinion, you know, watching that documentary, that's what was going on. Like the U.S. government was, CIA operatives were finding sources, and even drug distribution was alleged in that, sources of money to fund covert ops that they, when it couldn't be funded by Congress through funding bill, whatever. But we're ignoring that China's doing that with the drug trade. They're doing the exact same thing right now. That's what I'm saying. The synthetic drug trade. That's why we have methamphetamine. That's why we have fentanyl. It's because they control the chemicals. Biggest chemical producers in the world, they control the chemicals for those drugs. They're using that chemical trade to get money out of China, pick it up in the United States in the form of untraceable cash, and fund whatever kind of covert operations they're funding here, which unfortunately I don't think we'll know about for a number of years. So, I don't know, back to our report here, Mark. The incentives that the Chinese government gives, right? At least 14 fentanyl analogs are incentivized. Now, a fentanyl analog is just, let's call it like a chemically tweaked fentanyl. including 3-methylfentanyl, which has been used as a chemical weapon. I think the generally accepted thought now is that, you remember that theater in Russia that was taken over and they did a raid on it? I guess the thought is that this 3-methylfentanyl was used, pumped into the ventilation system there, and it killed a lot of people on both sides, hostages and the terrorists. But the thought is that was, you know, that was this 3-methylfentanyl being used as a chemical weapon. Over a dozen of these chemicals, a dozen of these chemicals have no legal use, accepted legal use anywhere in the world, right? But China subsidizes their production as long as they are exported outside the country. And like we already alluded to, under their own laws, these drugs are illegal. These chemicals are illegal. But again, they're allowing and incentivizing the production if the drugs go outside the country. There was a book called Fentanyl Inc., which I haven't read. Apparently, it details a lot of the things we're talking about here. I think the committee probably pulled some pieces from that. And after that book came out, the Chinese government tried to scrub all these references to the incentives that they offer from the internet. And I guess there's ways you can still pull them up. In fact, I was speaking with Vince, one of the producers, earlier today about stuff on the internet that never really disappears altogether. And the committee was able to pull the stuff up. Some of it's available if you're in China. So by using a VPN and appearing as if they're in China, they could pull up lists of chemical productions that are incentivized. The tax rebate amount is 13%.
Yeah.
As opposed to most other items that they offer rebates on, 3, 6, and 9%. So the production of fentanyl drugs, again, causing 70,000 deaths in the United States every year, that's one of the most incentivized products currently that's produced in China.
You know, Bill, I'm listening to you with this, and of course, I read some of the things, but you have a very soothing voice, and sometimes things sink in better than when I read them myself. And just thinking about these numbers and China's stance, I'm going to ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Why is it, do you think, that it seems that Americans, I want to be careful with this, because obviously the fentanyl crisis itself is certainly on the minds of most Americans. I don't want to misrepresent that, I think, obvious fact. But it seems like its source and the likely motivations behind its production and distribution, it seems like most Americans not grasp the long-term picture. Do you feel the same way? And if you don't tell me, but if you do, why do you think that is? Why do you think that Americans, at least from my point of view, seem to be blind to what's actually going on?
I agree 100%, Mark. Yeah. And I think two reasons. One is we don't, let's say culturally, politically, our leaders are not concerned. And you already mentioned this. I'm getting this from you. They're not concerned with the long-term plan. You know, they're concerned with today, not a year from now, 2 years from now. But the other thing that I think is significant here is there's still in this country a stigma attached to drug use where we can blame it on the drug users to some extent. We can say, oh, this is just people using drugs. I mean, this is what's going to happen. There's always been drug issues in this country. There's always going to be drug issues in this country. There's nothing that can really be done about it. It's a demand problem. Mm-hmm. They can get away with it by saying it's a demand problem, not a source problem. I disagree with that because, Mark, this is the first time in our history that the way drugs are killing people is very different today than it was in our childhood, right? Mm-hmm. When we were kids, Mark, I know we probably talked about this before, I just don't remember it, but we knew who was at risk of dying of what was then called a drug overdose, mm-hmm. right? If there was somebody that was a addictive or daily heroin user, you know that person was at risk of a drug-caused death. They were using a powerful opiate drug every day, multiple times a day. They're at risk. You could easily tell who that person is. And because that person was an addict, there was a stigma attached to that. Society could kind of dismiss them and say, hey, they're sick or they have a problem, whatever. They're a druggie. But today, it's very different in that you know, there's a big deception piece in drug use where especially teenagers, they think they're getting a Xanax pill. They think they're getting an oxycodone pill. They think they're getting a Percocet pill, and it has no prescription drug in it. It's just a fentanyl pill. That deception piece was never there years ago. Like, or if it was a one-off, you know what I mean? Yeah. It was an accidental thing, it was one specific drug dealer trying to pass something off as something else. Not like today where it's, you know, blanket market saturation where the drug is fake. You think and there's still people that don't know that these pills are fentanyl pills. So that deception part of it is a huge part of it. And the other thing is the accessibility. Like, we have so far as a society failed to take action on the things that are making these drugs accessible. When, and you and I definitely talked about this. You talked about when you were young, you knew who the other kids were who were selling drugs. So change that to today where, let's say, you don't need to know who's, all you need is a smartphone and you need Snapchat and you can get any kind of powerful synthetic drug that's out there and you can have it delivered to you. So I don't think that people in this country are, or maybe our politicians, I should be more specific, because I know the parents who've lost kids, they know this, right? They know these things we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the politicians realize that this is different now because the drugs are more accessible. And it's different now because there's this deception piece involved where people are getting drugs that they didn't bargain for or they didn't want. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does answer my question. And I think, you know, Bill, to put it in, you know, real quick terms, like you said, the difference when we were kids, young adults, to now is overdose then versus pure poisoning now.
Right.
You know, that's the, like, it's like someone, you know, drank bleach and they thought that it was red or white wine. It's just, it's not even a case of doing too much of anything, certainly too much in a chemical sense, but they didn't know. Mm-hmm. What you said is true. And I think that there is, to me, there must be more as well, because in other words, if we're sitting here on this podcast talking about these things, we have to assume that the people, quote unquote, in charge, the adults in the room, know about it well. And I'm talking about our federal government knows everything and more that we're talking about right now. And the same government, the same elected officials that are always flying the flag of, you know, global warming or climate change or whatever it is, you know, it's, what do they call it? An existential threat. That's what they call climate change, that we're all going to, you know, evaporate in the next, you know, 30 days because of cow farts. I mean, that drum is beaten to death, is it not? We all have to drive EV cars in the next 5 years, or the world's going to catch on fire, the oceans are going to dry up, or they're going to flood, or whatever it is, whatever the flavor of the month is. I mean, over and over, you know, you got to have, you know, whatever, you know, minimal flush toilet, all these things. And there's a method to my madness here. I'm talking about all this. We get hit so hard with so many of these things that are going to be the end of us, the end of the world, if we don't change our ways. Here's where the real threats are coming from. But tell me if I'm wrong. It doesn't seem that we're hearing a lot from the federal government about what we're discussing today. Certainly the fentanyl crisis, the end result, we hear a lot about. Absolutely, I said before. But we're not hearing a lot about China. Uh-huh. China is behind this. China is the essence. China is the beginning. China is the source of the problem. It may not go away 100% if we eliminate it from China, but China is the predominant source. And it seems like the people that we elect, if they really had our country's best interest in mind, mm-hmm. that they'd be standing up to this in the most transparent, really political sense. I'm talking about global political sense that we could think of, and fighting back with all the rhetoric possible and all the resources possible to deter China from doing this. I don't know why we're not seeing this from the Fed.
Is it a weak State Department, Mark? Do we just, because I think it is. I think that's a big part of it. Seems like on the whole fentanyl issue, our State Department has been non-existent with Mexico and with China. I don't even, it's, you know, I mean, to me, that's the biggest disappointment.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. It certainly is a weak State Department, which is part of a larger entity. But I 100%, I think, and again, I don't want to get off topic here, but we're seeing this in a lot of different ways with the State Department in the last months and years, quite frankly, very weak. But I think the result of a weak federal government, a weak United States, and specifically a weak State Department, we see a bully taking advantage of weakness. This is what happens. To pretend that just negotiations and whatever are going to make these problems go away, I think, is so naive, so childish. Yeah. Bullies thrive in an environment of weakness. They thrive on it. And right now, China does not see any pushback. They don't see any pushback in a rhetorical sense. They don't see any pushback on a southern border security sense or northern border security sense for that matter. And they're taking advantage of the situation. And they're going to push this, pardon the pun, but they're going to push this as hard and for as long as they can until someone stands up to them and the gorilla gets punched right in the nose.
Yep. And Mark, we saw that, again, this is going off topic, a little bit more about the State Department now, but we've seen the government of Mexico weaponize immigration. Mm-hmm. We've seen Central American governments, we talked about this on your show, you're a Leo Nation, weaponize immigrants. The Mexican government has weaponized the drug trade. Just meaning, when I say weaponized it, I just mean they use it then as a tool to extract concessions from us. Instead of doing things for the right reason, they say, well, we can do this, but you have to do these five things for us. And that puts us in a position of weakness when we negotiate. And it goes to what you're saying. That's not the way to deal with a bully. You don't deal with a bully by appeasing them. And I feel like that's what our State Department has been doing and is doing. And we're seeing the consequences of that, you know?
Yep.
Hey, one thing, I'd take one step back. You know, one of the issues that I heard frequently is the Chinese government would say they don't know who's making the chemicals. They don't know the companies that are involved in the manufacture of the chemicals. Now, when you think about it, that's almost like laughable because the companies have to declare that they're making them to get the tax break.
Yes.
So all they would have to do is look at the companies that are claiming the tax break. And maybe that's why the government, part of the reason why the government does this tax break is so they can track who the companies are they're doing. And not that they're doing anything about it, they're not. But they know who's making the chemicals.
Well, of
course. Because in order
to
get a tax break, you have to identify that you're doing it.
Of course they do. And even before the tax breaks, but you're right, that's the ultimate example of how they must know who's making what there. But just in a general sense, again, it's a communist. I know it's a hybrid. I understand that there's some level of free market, but nobody, and I'm talking nobody in China, goes into business or does business without the continuous oversight and involvement of the Chinese Communist Party and government, which are one of the same, but it doesn't happen. No one does business in China without the government knowing exactly what they're doing and having some hand in the pot. It just doesn't happen. If anybody believes that, then they're smoking something that's probably almost as dangerous as fentanyl. It's all there is to it. Now, again, does that surprise me that the Chinese Communist Party would say something like that? No, absolutely not. Again, Bill, you made the point early on, and it's so important that these people are violating their own laws to, and by the way, it's not, I guarantee you, it's not just the asymmetric warfare they're involved in with the United States, but it's also to enrich the elites in the Communist Party. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. So they know exactly what's going on.
That's 100% true. And I mean, Mark, I'm going back a few years. I had a buddy who's still at DEA. At the time, he was working in China. And I was perplexed because I was looking at this. You know, one of the things this report talks about, and we're not going to get into the weeds on it, is the money laundering aspect and how Chinese organized crime now dominates narco money laundering around the world. And it's for the reasons we already talked about. It's a way to move money without using the traditional financial system to fund whatever nefarious or Communist Party activities you want to fund. And I said to this guy in China, I said, hey, this is something that the Chinese government is going to want to partner with us on, because don't they want, they have capital flight restrictions. It's, I think it's $50,000 limit on how much money you can, and even then you need permission. So I said, hey, they're going to want to partner with us on this and go after these people that are using the drug trade to accomplish capital flight out of China, you know, millions of dollars, $100,000, et cetera. And he said, Bill, who are the people that have the money in China? And that's when it dawned on me, yeah, you're exactly right, Mark. This is the Communist Party, and they're getting their own money out to enrich themselves and take advantage of the world financial markets and hedge, and also, you know, hey, contribute to the downfall of the United States while they're doing it, right?
Right. It's a win-win.
Yep. So one thing before we move on, that the committee that produced this report, they actually did undercover a little bit, Mark, and they reached out to a whole bunch of companies that advertise on the web selling fentanyl, fentanyl analogs, fentanyl precursors. Mm-hmm. 27 companies responded. 26 of them offered to sell these chemicals immediately. And this is absolutely true. I mean, hey, we did at DEA, we did undercover and targeted a bunch of these companies. And probably in 2023, at one point, there was a massive national announcement of indictments, mostly out of Tampa, Florida, and New York, targeting a bunch of chemical companies in China. What I found is that although there may be front companies, Mark, that, you know, five or six, seven different front companies, in this case, 20, the number of actual businesses behind the scenes is nowhere near that many, because you'll find that several of them have the same phone number. Several of them may be resolved to the same IP, so the business is run off the same computer. You get the idea.
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of different front companies run by, or that are in actuality really just a couple companies that are, by the way, in some cases, not just incentivized by taxes, but actually owned by, partially owned by the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, Bill. You talked about that, the undercover investigation, because I was going to talk. Yep. In the same paragraph, I found that so interesting. Great minds think alike. And by the way, Bill, plug the name of the report again, so our listeners and viewers can get that.
Yep. And it is online. Although I'm going to say, Mark, I started when I, so the name of the report is the Select Committee on the Strategic Competition Between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP's Role in the Fentanyl Crisis. That's the name of the report, about a 60-something page report. I downloaded it,
pages.
And Mark, was it just me or did your computer? My computer started giving me some problems after I downloaded this thing.
You know, I haven't noticed that. I actually read and printed it out a couple of days ago, so I haven't gone back. But although my power did go out today, Bill, interesting point.
Yeah.
I don't know who's watching me. But from that same excerpt you're reading about, it says the communications made it clear that the undercover investigator was interested in the precursors and narcotics for illegal purposes. This did not deter any of them. In fact, one PRC, fentanyl precursor, vendor sent verified records to prior drug shipments, to Texas, mm-hmm. to show that it was capable of making the deal. Another repeatedly called the undercover investigator on WhatsApp and forcibly tried to make the sale. So there are two things there, is that it looks like nobody on this end gives a damn. They're not afraid. And number two, this pusher here was showing that, hey, I've already done these deals directly to Texas. You talk about, you know, intimately involved in on this side of the border, in addition to stuff coming across, it's all over the place. And there just seems to be this, you know, Teflon feeling that we're immune.
So, Mark, here's what they would do, and I have firsthand experience with this. They would take a picture of a tracking, like a shipping label. They would take a picture of a shipping label with a tracking number on it and send it to you, and they would say, hey, track this package. And you'd put in the number, and you'd see, yep, and it was delivered to Texas. It was delivered wherever. And they would offer 100% guarantee that it'll pass through customs. And again, this is a discussion, like that's a whole other thing about how they're exploiting the de minimis CBP rules about products coming into the country to avoid searches and stuff. That's a whole other topic, but there's definitely some weaknesses that we have in protecting ourselves from packages coming into the country. And they're exploiting that every day.
Now, Bill, you said, and it is, I think it'd be a very interesting one. It's a topic for another show, whole different discussion about borders and customs. In your experience, How often do those personnel become compromised, influenced, or is that hopefully rare? I'm talking about, in other words, bribery.
Or intimidation. No, it definitely happens, Mark. And where I see it happen, and I don't want to make it sound like it happens a lot. It does not happen a lot. But when it does happen, where I see it happening most frequently is at the land border, the ports of entry. And, you know, when people hear the word port, they think of a seaport.
Yeah.
A port of entry is also a vehicle crossing. And that's where I see it happening most often is vehicle crossings, where someone can say, I'm going to be working these hours. He can text someone and say, he or she, and say, I'm at lane 13. And then the coyotes or the, I don't know what they call them, halcones or something on the other side of the border, they will start directing traffic, smugglers through those particular lanes. So we have seen that, or DEA had seen that and worked with internal affairs of the Customs and Border Protection to go after those people. With packages, I don't see it as much just because there's really not even a need to it. With the way the rules are, if the declared value of a package is, and listen, I'm not the expert on this, so fact check me on this, but I think there's a de minimis thing, meaning that if the value, if the declared value of something is $800 or less, it's not subject to search. It's almost treated as like personal goods you're sending in, you know, or like a gift or something. So that stuff happens all the time. And it's actually right now, this blows people's mind. And this is, you know, an embarrassment for the United States, but we got to put this out there. A lot of the chemicals to make specifically fentanyl, not so much methamphetamine, but specifically fentanyl that end up in Mexico, they transit through the United States because of these loopholes. And it's actually easier to get the chemicals in the United States and then drive them south across the border. So that's something that even, and I think in the policy solutions part of this report, they, and I think they even addressed that there, but that's an issue.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. The next part, Mark, the CCP fails to prosecute. So this just goes into the advanced surveillance capabilities that the Chinese Communist Party has, the government has, and they don't use these capabilities to detect people sending fentanyl and fentanyl precursors out of the country. If they're doing it for export, they don't direct their resources at them. The internet censorship triggers are only effective for internal drug distribution. Does it sound like I have that right? It's like, is that your read on how they talk about that?
And by the way, that's what I read. And I was asking myself, my God, how complex is that algorithm? That, or maybe it catches everything. Maybe someone's filtering. Okay, this is internal, this is external, whatever. I don't know. But it sounds like an awfully complex, obviously, but very complex production involved there. System.
Right. They have. You know, in some cases, the report talked about this, and I'd seen this, where companies were notified that they were under investigation. Information was passed, that the report details where investigative information was passed to the Chinese government, and parties were alerted to the existence of the investigation. The thing that, now this came from a ProPublica report. What is that, Mark? Do you know what that is? ProPublica, is that like a,
no.
Is that an independent news organization? No, I don't know either.
No.
But they mention it in this report, and they talk about Chinese Communist Party officials meeting with known criminals to include criminals in the United States. And I don't know, you know, I'd be very curious to know where that information came from, how they established that. But that's, to me, incredibly telling and interesting that they have Chinese Communist Party officials meeting with criminals around the world to include in the United States.
Well, you know what? It's interesting, but of course, it's not surprising if you accept the fact that they're engaged in this type of strategic behavior. You know, ultimately, the goal is the downfall of America. So, and that's why I asked the question about compromising law enforcement officials. I'm just wondering to what extent they have infiltrated the entire network, the entire system. And by the way, that would be nothing new. The Soviets, God, they had bugs in the highest levels of government in the 1960s. So I am curious about it. But interacting with and coordinating with criminals doesn't surprise me a bit.
Yeah. And then one more thing, maybe, Mark, before we move on to the policy solutions or the recommendations that the report makes. And we really did talk about this already, but maybe we'll hit a couple different points on it. And to make it clear, again, this isn't just incentives and tax breaks. The government holds ownership, the Chinese government holds ownership interests in some of these companies. And to make it clear also, the Chinese internet allows sales outside the United outside of China. So I don't know, maybe it's IP based. They're looking at IP addresses, and if it's not from a Chinese IP, they allow contact with certain sites, or I don't know how they're doing that. And then the final thing is the report talks about the domination of drug money laundering by these Chinese organized crime groups. Here's the extent to which that has taken place since 2016 when I said this whole thing started. Mm-hmm. And again, we talked about the reasons why, right? It's a way to get untraceable cash into the United States to fund whatever operations they want to fund. It's a way to, for Chinese Communist Party officials to get their wealth out of China and have access to world financial markets to benefit them personally. And it's a way to further or perpetuate the downfall of the United States. So a win. Prior to 2016, 2015, the cost for laundering money for, let's say, a Mexican drug organization would be, let's say, 6%. So if a Mexican criminal organization wanted their money laundered, introduced in the financial system or whatever, they would be paying 6% up, 6% fee to get that done. As the Chinese started getting into the business, there was such, the Chinese organized crime had such a demand for drug money, right? That, and again, I don't want to go over the reasons again, but they had such a demand for drug money to accomplish all the things we've already talked about for the reasons we've already talked about, that rate fell to 5%, they would do it for 5%, they would do it for 4%, they would do it for 3%, all the way down, Mark, to 0%. So they would launder. Now you tell me, if it's not state sponsored, why are you laundering someone's money for free? They're doing it for free. Now, there is arguably, they're collecting fees on the Chinese side. It gets a little complicated. So they're making money on the Chinese side of the deal, but you're doing it for free. There has to be
something other than purely economic incentive.
That's it. So no one can compete with that, you know? So they have, right now, they are the dominant force in international drug money laundering. So when you think about that, what that allows them to do, Mark, now, they have the ability now, using the drug trade, to move untraceable cash, really, that's what it is, anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the world. And don't forget, Bitcoin is supposedly outlawed in China, but this report makes repeated references to payments made to these companies that are getting tax break, that are state-owned, payments made from people in the United States by Bitcoin. I can tell you that, you know, in my experience with DEA undercover operations, DEA made payments in Bitcoin that's prohibited in China to these Chinese companies that are state-sponsored, given tax breaks, et cetera. So, you know, it's kind of a farce. But my point being that their domination of money laundering allows them to really move money anywhere in the world at the drop of a hat, and it's really untraceable. So that's incredible access, and that's an incredible tool to have when you're trying to affect economic warfare or asymmetric warfare that we talked about earlier. So finally, policy solutions. What did you see with solutions, Mark, when the committee dropped what they think will help? Anything that stood out to you?
You know, I start reading it, Bill, and you know, one of the first things they talked about, you know, forming this.
You and I are going to have the same view on that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking it's, you have to form a committee. You have to find, it's a task force. Actually, I have it in my notes here, but I just remember reading this yesterday. So just from memory, wherever it went, but, you know, creating a task force, where did it go? I sat here a second ago.
No, you're right.
And it's fine. I get, now, I have to remember, this was a congressional investigation. It was Congress. So this is not something that was provided by, you know, the FBI or any of the other three-letter, you know, organizations. But that was, when I first saw that, I thought that there's a lot of bureaucracy here. It's going to happen all over again. Yep. And, you know, God forbid, unless something, you know, catastrophic happens, and I said, God forbid, I mean that literally, that this may, just the whole thing may get lost in the weeds again. This may, the investigation came up. It's kind of front page a little bit. I mean, not that much. We're talking right. about it, but I don't see it much anyplace else, Bill.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, there's really going to be any teeth. And you're talking about State Department. This stuff has to come through hard rhetoric. It, you know, in other words, to fight this, and it has to come tangible sanctions. There has to be consequences for this action. So talking about more investigations, damn it, we know what's going on. There has to be something, you know, the president needs to be taking the point with this. He needs to be at his podium talking about this. So that's just my overview about it. We can get deep in the weeds about a few of these articulated points here, but that's where I wanted to start with. It's like, I kind of had a little bit of depression when I saw the first thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Mark. And I don't know, I guess that's probably because of our experience in law enforcement, right? I mean, to the public, that probably sounds like a real common sense thing. But let me tell you something, folks. There's already something called the Office of National Drug Control Policy, right? This is the executive office of the White House. They have a national task force. It's called HIDA, High Intensity Drug Trafficking Area. All the different federal agencies participate in that. That's an existing task force that's already set up, already has infrastructure, already has hundreds of people, you know, collecting salaries off it, which is another thing that I hate about these task forces is they set them up and then there's a whole level of bureaucracy that takes funding for salaries, administration, and all this other stuff instead of directing that money to the problem. So there's the HIDA task force. There's something called the OCDEF task force, Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. This is run by the Department of Justice. This was started years ago to address situations like this with other drugs. All the federal agencies partnering together to do it. There's state and local investigators in these things too, both HIDA and OCDEF. So what I'm saying is we don't need another task force. We already have a bunch of task forces out there in place. Maybe if you want to create a reporting note or something, I would argue that's even already in place. The report mentions involvement of DEA Special Operations Division. They actually named that in the report as some place that may be beneficial to house, I guess, some part of this or whatever. I work there. That infrastructure is already in place too. You know what? All this stuff exists. So when I saw that first one, that was kind of a turnoff, especially when they talk about fully empower it to fulfill its mission. Mark, if we have law enforcement task forces now that are not fully empowered to do their mission, why do we have them? That's the fact that they have to put that in there is, what is the word, endemic? Or it's indicative of what a whole other issue is. Like, why do we have task forces if they're not fully empowered to fulfill their mission? So they're talking about that like it's something new. So that was kind of a turn.
Second bullet point, isn't it? Yeah, it is. When empower or endings like this.
Here's the second one. Mark, you got it. Provide law enforcement and intelligence officials with the statutory authorities, tools, and support they need to execute responsibilities.
And I'll scratch my head. I said, you're telling me now that our men and women can't do what you are. I mean, it just kind of boggles the mind. This is the best you can come up with. And you know, Congress, our so-called leaders, it just boggles the mind. Now, by the way, I understand that from a congressional point of view, there is only so much they can do. Right. I totally understand that. The ability to levy sanctions against another government, it doesn't, you know, that comes from the executive branch. I totally understand that. But those recommendations should be in there. In other words, there should be some political leverage, you know, pressure to have, who, by the way, whoever the president, this president, the next president, 10 years from now, there should be some language here saying, hey, executive branch, State Department, you need to be doing X, Y, Z. Congress can certainly make those types of recommendations. But the idea that we have to say that our men and women in law enforcement should be able to do X, Y, and Z, more and more of this, that doesn't have any teeth as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't have any teeth. And one of the reasons it has no teeth, Bill, and everyone listening, is that does anybody really think that the Mexican cartels or the Chinese nationals or the Chinese Communist Party are afraid of any laws that we're going to put on the book? Does anybody really think that's the problem? We need to be addressing the heart of the issue, the genesis, where the stuff is physically coming from, and levy sanctions to make it uncomfortable to do so.
Yep. That's the bottom line. I mean, hey, we talked about, I don't know, 3 months ago, Mark, the Attorney General of the United States putting out a memo saying not to prosecute minimum mandatory cases in the drug space, or do basically telling prosecutors to do everything they can not to prosecute minimum mandatory drug cases. And then we have Congress now saying, we need statutory authorities. No, we have the statutory authorities. We just need everyone on the same page, and we need a decision to hold people accountable for their actions, which right now we're not willing to do. So What change can you expect? You know,
not much. And by the way, I'm all for the stiffer, the better, as far as The laws here that we can enforce. In other words, it's not the one or the other. I'm all good with that, but you're right, Bill, you're 100% right.
So third recommendation, and listen, there's a bunch of sub ideas under these, or not sub ideas, but kind of subtopics under each recommendation. I don't see anything really that necessary to talk about. The third one, it's one that you kind of alluded to, but this is, I think, really intended in a different manner. I think, let me say it first, codify, strengthen, and impose sanctions on entities involved in the fentanyl trade. But I get the feeling that your sanctions, Mark, are really more targeting foreign governments than foreign entities, people, or businesses.
100%.
In other words, make it uncomfortable for the government of a foreign country so they do something to address the problem in their country, which I think this report demonstrates they have the ability to do, and they've just chosen not to do.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Listen, whether it's the Mexican government, the Chinese government, or any other government, these are the ones we're talking about primarily today, but any other government that allows this to take place or actually facilitates it, in the case of the Chinese government, either way, even if you are only turning a blind eye to it in your own country, as a government of that country, you need to feel the full force of American sanctions, because your actions or inactions in your own country are killing our people. That's unacceptable.
Yep. What else?
The Trade and Customs Enforcement Measure.
And then I was going to talk about that de minimis thing in there, Mark.
Not that I saw.
No.
It might be in there.
Yeah, so it does. So
does it.
This legislation amending the tariff, and I think this is actually, okay, so we talked about not needing statutory authorities. This is where I'd probably step back from that, and I would say this is something that needs to be done. Here's what Congress said. And actually, this is something that they can do, and they're saying Congress should do the following. Pass legislation amending the Tariff Act of 1930, Mark. So It's almost, what?
100 years old,
to reduce the de minimis threshold for duty-free shipments into the United States with particular focus on foreign adversaries, including the PRC. Approximately 3 million overseas packages arrive in the United States every day. Many fall under the current de minimis threshold of $800, resulting in the parcels receiving minimal inspection and not having to pay duties, taxes, or fees. Now, this is interesting. This is what I was speaking about earlier. Fentanyl precursors and dangerous synthetic drugs currently enter the United States through these de minimis packages. During the course of its investigation, the Select Committee heard from California State law enforcement, might have very well been the CHP, Mark,
that's,
I don't know.
That's the only one that, yeah.
Yeah, that the current form of the de minimis exception leaves America so vulnerable to drug smuggling that cartels have The current form of the de minimis exception leaves America so vulnerable to drug smuggling that cartels increasingly have PRC-sourced fentanyl precursors shipped first into the United States before smuggling them into Mexico. In other words, the current form of the de minimis exception makes the United States the most vulnerable nation in North America to this form of drug trafficking. So, you know, I'm told there's widespread support for this. This is something that has to be done, because I know the tools currently in this particular area don't exist, and it's embarrassing and disgraceful that the chemicals are coming into the U.S. first, then transiting to Mexico where the drugs are made, and then the drugs are coming back here and killing our people. That's really it, Mark. I think we got something where again, to recap, started in 2015, 2016, the Chinese government, the Chinese Communist Party realized that they were going to have to step up their game, so to speak, to fight this asymmetric warfare against the United States. Their economy was struggling. They devalued their currency. There was a lot of rhetoric about trade tariffs, trade wars. This is a specific decision they made to move forward and use illicit drugs as a way to enrich themselves and really decimate the United States. Anything else?
You summed it up well. It is a Cold War. I think the sooner that everybody in this country, especially our elected officials, realizes that, the better off we'll be. But we better hurry up because the Chinese have a long-term game plan.
Yeah, they do. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.